You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show," okay? Walk in and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you," okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. All right, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, "Yo, what? I'm a crocodile." You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kind of lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're going to write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas. not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to like 9 pitches a day. So if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're going to pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, no, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay, that's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddball streaming October 7th on my Netflix. Me and my twin sister used to share a single Neopet account, which was a dumb decision because it was completely free to make a second Neopet account, and we already struggled at sharing things in the non-virtual world. But the reason we co-ran our Neopet account was because we didn't want to put our pets through a divorce, and because we wanted to save up our Neopoints for a paintbrush. For those of you who grew up with real video games, in Neopets, a paintbrush was a super rare item that would change your Neopet's appearance based off the paintbrush you used. There were Christmas paintbrushes, baby paintbrushes, Guy Fieri paintbrushes, and an invisible paintbrush that just turned your Neopet invisible. Why? When I said that paintbrushes were a rare item, I meant it. You see, your average Neopet paintbrush would sell for about 1 to 2 million Neopoints, and the most me and my sister had ever saved up was about 100,000.
Why did you spend 3K on food? We're trying to get paintbrushes!
It was Flower 67's birthday, and you spent 4K getting that stupid jacket!
The jacket is cool and you know it!
One day, my sister went searching in the back alleys of the internet for other ways to obtain a paintbrush, and she stumbled upon this website that said, get free paintbrushes, and all she had to do was enter in her username and password, and they'd send us a fairy paintbrush. Ooh. And in a moment of desperation, she entered in the login details of our shared account into a shady website, and you'll never guess what happened next. We log into our account, and there were 3 fairy paintbrushes in our inventory, and just kidding, we got hacked. And we lost all 100,000 of our Neopoints, and we never got the paintbrush we were promised. But we learned a valuable lesson that day, which was
People will try to scam you, so trust no one. We were lucky enough to only lose virtual money, but some people aren't that lucky. On the internet, you have to deal with people trying to scam you constantly. There's probably comments underneath this very video of people using my name and profile picture saying, click on this link and get a free gift card, and they always use a stupid amount of emojis so their comment sticks out more. I thought it was obvious that those comments were fake, but some people still fall for them. Listen, we need to get one thing straight about our relationship. If I ever use this many emojis, I want you to shoot me. Scammers like to target non-tech-savvy people, or what I like to call babies and baby boomers. There's a lot of things you can do to help prevent people from taking advantage of you on the internet, but my rule of thumb is that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. No one's giving out free gift cards, your long-lost uncle didn't wire transfer you money, and you can't get free paintbrushes. You can't cheat the system, that's just life, man. Also, if you ever get a pop-up saying your computer has a virus, call this number to fix it. Don't. A guy with an Indian accent named Jason will charge you real money to fix the virus, but won't do anything. Because you never had a virus in the first place. But those are all illegal scams. People go to jail over those scams. Identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer from it every year. However, there are some scams that are, for some unknown reason, completely legal. And frankly, I think we should reopen Alcatraz for the people who do these scams. So here's my list for the top four legal scams that shouldn't be legal. The first legal scam is mobile games. I was doing a show with this 9-year-old kid named Araya, and in the show he was gonna punch me like this. And one day while we were rehearsing, Araya asked me, "Can I play some games on your phone?" So I gave him my phone and his dad told me, "Hey man, I don't even trust my kid with my phone." And I thought, what's the worst thing he can do besides tweet something or delete my YouTube channel? But he did something so much worse. He downloaded a free game, and inside the game, you could buy a VIP member version that gave you extra lives and more skins. The thing that was a scam was that the app gave you the VIP member free for 3 days, then charged you $6 a week. That's a dollar a day, not including Thursdays, to play some stupid mobile game. It's more expensive than a Netflix subscription and a tasty hot and ready $5 Little Caesars pizza. Now, some of you might be thinking, okay, yeah, that's a ridiculous price for a mobile game, but that's not a scam. They tell you how much it's going to cost right there on the screen. But here's the thing. Roughly zero people bought the VIP member pass because they were fans of the game and didn't mind the price. No one is willing to pay a weekly bill for a game where all you do is this. But 100% of the people who paid for the subscription are kids using their parents' phone and bought the VIP pass because they have no concept of money. And you don't even have to enter in your credit card information, so it's easier for kids just to hit the purchase 6,000 gems button. It's targeting kids, and I don't like it. Scam. I wish I had the confidence of a mobile game developer to charge someone $312 a year to play their stupid game. My proposal to fix this scam is to ban mobile games entirely and everyone play Tetris 99. Nintendo Online is cheaper than the VIP club subscription anyway. The second legal scam is college. Textbooks. We live in a society where all human knowledge and misconceptions are contained on the internet. But if you print out that knowledge and bind up the pages, suddenly you made a best-selling book that people are required to buy. There are some textbooks that are just a CD or a code that you need a computer to even access the book, so what's the point of buying the textbook if you have a computer that's connected to the internet in the first place? And don't tell me that the books are better for people that don't have internet. I know you have an internet connection, because come on. My solution to this scam is to drop out and make YouTube videos. The third legal scam is psychics. I don't want to debate whether or not psychics are real, because they're not. My horoscope told me so. My belief is that no one can talk to dead people because we're not living in a cartoon. And it just makes me sick that there are psychics who are taking advantage of people who are grieving and are so desperate to talk to their loved ones again that they'll try anything, even paying people to lie to them. Ooh, I burned my finger on that hot take. Now, I don't think that every psychic out there is trying to scam people. Most of them are. But I do think there are some psychics who legitimately believe that dead people use them as a vessel to talk to their living relatives. And in their three eyes, they are helping and giving their clients closure. I understand that a very small percentage of them are just trying to help. But it doesn't matter because they're all fake. My solution to this scam is that you don't pay a psychic unless they can guess how much money you're going to pay them.
should be close to zero, hopefully. And the last legal scam is multi-channel networks. Wait, do you guys hear that? It sounds like bridges being burned. When your YouTube channel starts growing, you'll get contacted by a multi-channel network, or MCN, and they'll make empty promises that if you join their network, they can help your channel grow and earn more money. And they'll brag about how many people are in their network, when really that just means there's less of a chance they'll care about you. And all you have to do to join is give them a percentage of your YouTube money every month. And once you sign your soul away, what a network will actually do is nothing. Except take a cut of your money every month. It's like showing your dog a tennis ball and then pretending to throw it, and then when the dog realizes he's chasing nothing, he's already signed a 3-year contract to keep chasing the fake ball. I know this last scam might not apply to everyone watching, but if this video helps at least one up-and-coming YouTuber to not join an MCN, then it will have been worth it. So that's my list for the top 4 legal scams that should not exist and die. I don't think this video is going to actually change anything. People will always be greedy and try and get money any way they can. So if there's anything you should take away from this video, is that I'm giving away free gift cards! Click the link in the description to claim your prize! Good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my list of the top 4 legal scams that should be illegal. If there's any psychics in the audience that I offended, you should have known before watching this video that I don't agree with you. And if there's any MCNs watching this video, please stop emailing me. So I'm really excited to announce some Halloween merch, which includes a freaking Halloween costume. I know it's August, but I don't really get a lot of chances to update you guys on things, so we're doing it now. If you want to get your hands on a costume, you should order it soon, because we only ordered a certain amount of costumes, so once they sell out, they won't be ready until next year. If you have any questions about the sizing or the shipping, then be sure to ask my business email. Thank you for watching this video and sticking around to listen to the end card. I know a lot of people click off once the end card starts, but at least you're cool. A big thanks to everyone who worked on this video, and until next time, wear your seatbelt. Hey man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same? That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out. Hey guys, did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous? Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it. No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects. Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring. Hello? You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy? A watch. Really? What a nerd. Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, "Don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful." And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except, my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom?
Thank you for not letting me do that.
In the 7th grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's. Hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new 2 pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is.
Seriously, two pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants.
And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill.
At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get
demonetized.
But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon.
You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the words I said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They are gross. Cuties and herpes.
Yeah, no, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the odd ones out. Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's two shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple two $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look everyone, I got $40. But again, if you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear. But I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name-brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, "James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character." That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons.
One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my soul. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, "Hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right?" So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets!
And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, "Hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. Do you want to come sit at our lunch table?" And I said, "No, being cool sucks!"
So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is a whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry. Everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show. Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood. In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey. Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude. Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Cocomelon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and... I watched all 141 episodes. Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen... ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is, like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out.
Bingo was sad that Dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly.
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, you didn't get to see the ladybug, I would say, that's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night. In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, well, where was the last place you had it? The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into the show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, this show teaches you how to be a good parent, because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents. It's well written and wholesome. Anyone, regardless of having kids, can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy, implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch. And we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww, we made them. The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did!" He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away! And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punk sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit."
Mommy, why are you hitting me?
Getting a spanking.
Mommy, you're hurting
me. I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you.
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode, I heard so much about it, I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought,
Oh, okay. They're saving the deepest one for last. All right, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
Pinatas. I love pinatas. It's perfect for when you want to beat something to death, but also want candy.
Why do they make it look so pretty? Most of the time when you're playing with it, it looks like this.
What the, Alex, what are you doing here?
I just wanted to know what it would feel like to have a billion subscribers.
No. Go! Get out! Go back to It's Alex Clark and wait your turn.
Okay, fine.
Don't come back unless you have cake! Pinatas. Here's a story that involved me when I was a first grader in a pinata. I don't know if any of you guys did this in your elementary school, but when it was someone's birthday, that kid would bring treats for the whole class. And then the whole class would take 10 minutes, stop everything they're doing, and then pass out the pastries to everyone. How come we don't do that anymore? In high school, depending on the teacher, they don't do anything for your birthday party. And in college, heck, no one even talks to you. So I have a twin sister, and we were in the first grade together. So when it came time for our birthdays, we had to celebrate two birthdays. It's double birthdays. We gotta do something extra special. My mom had an idea. Let's do a pinata. But since my mom is super cheap, she decided to make her own pinata out of paper mache. And it turns out making homemade pinatas are easy. All you gotta do is blow up a balloon, cover it in paper mache, wait for it to harden, pop the balloon inside, cut a hole open, fill it with candy, cover the hole back up with paper mache, paint it, and then beat it senseless. Simple. So my mom went above and beyond and made a sphere pinata for our entire first grade class. Me and my sister's birthday is towards the end of the school year. And in elementary school, that last week of school, like, you don't even do anything. It doesn't even count. So hopefully my teacher wasn't too mad at what was about to transpire. My sister and I were just pumped the whole school day. Because we helped build the pinata. We helped paint it, and now we're going to help beat it to pieces. The teacher eventually called out,
"All right, class, James' mom made us a pinata, so we're all going to go outside and whack it."
Oh, yes, this was perfect. It was our birthday. We gotta beat up a pinata at school. I have the best mom. Me and my sister got a swing first because we're the birthday boys. We didn't end up breaking it, but I wasn't mad. Let these other non-birthday people have some fun. I'm a generous guy. Hey, in the end, I just want the candy. So the next guy goes up, then the next, and then eventually everyone got a turn. Well, a pinata's supposed to break, ain't it? Apparently, my mom was a little precautious and put a few extra layers of paper mache on the pinata, so that way, everyone would get a turn! Yay! And apparently, she also overestimated the strength of paper mache and first graders. But did this teacher let the whole class down? No. You know what she did? Bless her soul. She said,
"All right, class, we're all gonna take turns throwing this against a curb."
I mean, what other option did this teacher have? She could have stabbed it, but I don't think that would have been very fun. Looking back, she might have just been wanting to speed up the process, but as a group of 7-year-olds, we had a blast. Also, I'm glad the pinata was not in the shape of an animal, because imagine how traumatizing that would have been as 7-year-olds to curb stomp a unicorn. We would have been like little tiny mob bosses. Alright, Tony, you ready to give up the candy? Such a shame you feel that way, Tony. Bruce? I'm glad my mom was so thoughtful putting all those layers of paper mache in the pinata, because we all got a turn throwing the pinata on the ground. I remember getting so into it, I remember jumping up in the air before smashing the pinata onto the pavement. Nothing was going to get in between me and whatever candy was in there. Pretty soon though, we were all getting pretty antsy. Everyone was like, I was promised there'd be candy. Eventually, after what felt like an eternity of beating this pinata into the ground, we got a rip. I don't know if you guys saw the first episode of The Walking Dead. It's actually the only episode I've ever seen. And there's a scene in the first episode where the zombies rip open a horse and eat its organs.
Well, that was pretty much what it looked like after we got a rip in the pinata. I don't remember what candy was in there, but hopefully it was worth it. And that was probably the best and worst pinata I ever broke.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
We're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
Alright, so strap in. This is going to be a long video, everyone.
Alright, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level 1. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, fear right now is being like, oh yeah, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then drawing everything wrong. Oh no, I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh crap, oh, that's on the same layer. Oh no. Maybe since he's a villain, he should be you know?
He's a bad villain. Not bad as an evil, but bad
a
as in
bad villain.
Actually bad.
When I'm going to be editing this, I'm just going to have a picture of it, just off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just a shell and then something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, Jaden, no, there's say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose. So whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
He doesn't? I'm missing a couple of these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are this, you know. Yeah. Okay.
Alright, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndour and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
It's the whole point of these. Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has a little, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is the opposite. It's the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done. I'm just...
Are you done already?
I mean, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should, check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well, now I'm not done coloring it. There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Now I'm... Oh, man. So this is what I drew.
Aww, it looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. That's aww, adorable. Yours is... That's really good. It's wearing kind of a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the
oh,
belly.
You're right.
All
right. All right.
Next one.
Next one.
Yours is... Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that just how you say it?
I was never, like, into the cute Pokemon. I was, like, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if, like, if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
Got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so. If I had time to do line art, oh, this would look so much better. I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color.
I heard all your undoes.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Ugh! Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Buizel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float, and then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's, like, a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
one. No, I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where, like, people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's gotta be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't, like, a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's, like, a story now.
Oh, yeah, there's like, an end. You do it, and then, like, you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just, like, seriously just, like, adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Ah, you keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. And he doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay. That helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah.
And it has...
And it's red.
And it's red. And the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or am I thinking, is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, Rattatat? I always put in, like, one too many Atatas. Rat-a-tat-a-tat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are, like, bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's, like, a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just gonna draw a crocodile.
I can see the image.
Right?
In my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I've tried to draw that twice, and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're going to look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inkay.
Inkay?
Am I saying that right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new bat one?
Yeah, and he's got, like, the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I, like, that doesn't, that, like, I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like, if you held that one up and, like, a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are going to dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time, and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just, like, stopped and looked at it, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look cool. I'm making it look derpy. All right, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. All right, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aw.
Aw! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
You know how when people get into a new relationship, they go through a honeymoon phase? Well, me and my girlfriend went through a is the person I'm dating a deranged murderer phase. When she first came over to my house, she thought my Nintendo figure collection was something only a psychopath would have. And she's right. When you've been living alone for so long, sometimes you just need to buy friends and put them on display. And sometimes you do this by turning people into lampshades or chairs. Luckily, I just collect hunky reptile figures. Gif doesn't actually think I'm a psychopath anymore, which is good, you know, because I don't want anyone to know the truth. However, early on in our relationship, there were some things I did that she didn't like. Like one time I was unloading the dishwasher and I was putting away the knives and Gif looked at me all concerned and I asked, what's the matter, huh? I don't know what made her run to the other side of the room like that when I could clearly just throw the knife at her. Yeah, she's kind of stupid. But she definitely got her point across that she didn't like me holding multiple knives and told me to cut it out. But I didn't know if she was a psychopath either though, because there are definitely some things about her that made me question her sanity. Like how she owns a $2,000 animal mascot costume, but she hates sports. That's weird. One time when I was over at her apartment, I was looking through her freezer, assuming she had bagel bites, and I asked, hey babe, where's all the bagel bites? And there was this plastic grocery bag in there, and she tells me, no, don't look in there! We don't have any bagel bites, you ate them all, remember? But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, hold on. What the frick does this chick have in her freezer that she doesn't want me to see? A freezer is not a place where you tell someone, don't look in there. You say that about underwear drawers and toilets. That's it. I don't know what we did for the next 10 minutes, because all I was thinking about was how many severed hands were in Gif's freezer. But then I thought, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. I optimistically asked, hey, babe, are you, perhaps keeping a surprise for me in the freezer? Like a birthday cake? My birthday's not for another 5 months, but that's the only thing I could think a person would hide in a freezer that wouldn't make them a psychopath. And she said, nope.
So what's in there?
Don't worry about it. Do you not see how this looks? If the doors weren't locked, I would have been out of there. I wasn't about to lose sleep over this, so I held up the knife I had from the previous joke and said, what's in the freezer? And she went, it's a dead snake. You had a dead snake next to the bagel bits! So fun fact about my GIF, she owns 8 snakes. Mm-hmm. Apparently she used to own 9. I've learned that snakes are a very low-maintenance pet. You only have to feed them once every 3 years, and if you cut them in half, they turn into 2 snakes. Yeah, so I have no clue how one of her snakes could have died. And another fun fact, snakes lack the part of the brain that feels love. They're physically incapable of showing affection. So your pet hognose would sell your soul to Snake Satan for one dead mouse. So she already has 8 pets that don't love her, and potentially her boyfriend too if she doesn't get rid of that freezer snake. At least my reptiles aren't dead in a freezer. I immediately start asking questions. Why do you have a dead snake in your freezer? How many other dead animals are in your freezer? What the heck's wrong with you? And she said, I wanted to get him taxidermied, but the person I wanted to have do it was busy. Also, there's dead rats in there for my snakes. Oh, that explains why the bagel bites tasted so funny. What's extremely gross is that the snake is still in there to this day. I don't know how long the snake was in there before, but it's been well over a year since that incident. It's honestly great, though, because now she can never complain about the state of my refrigerator. I'll have potatoes that are sprouting more potatoes, grapes that are getting me tipsy, and if she points any of it out, I just respond with, oh, you think my refrigerator's disgusting? Yeah, Medusa? Uh-huh. One time she said, ah, my fridge smells terrible and I don't know why. Really? You can't think of a single reason? She said, no, I said the fridge smells bad, not the freezer. I said, I will flush your snake down the toilet and give you a swirly. Now that's the sign of true love, kids. But for all I know, she could totally still have severed hands in there. After dealing with the snakesicle situation, there's some other things I've learned from being in a relationship. Apparently, there are rules and etiquettes when eating food, and my girlfriend sure does love and enforce those rules. I was taught, don't put your elbows on the table, close your mouth when you're chewing unless you want to talk to someone, and make sure you eat something green every once in a while. But according to her, there's more than that. Like, did you know that bagel bites aren't a part of a balanced diet? We were at a restaurant one time, pre-COVID, and when we got our food, Gif took a napkin and put it on her lap and told me to do that as well because you're supposed to do that in a society. I looked around the restaurant and said, but no one else has a napkin on their laps. And she said, that's because you wanted to eat at a Denny's. I didn't know why she was such a stickler for table manners until I went to her family's place for Thanksgiving and I stepped inside and saw 2 sets of staircases in their house. And it all made sense. Oh. They're fancy and collect staircases. Going to my girlfriend's home for Thanksgiving was the first time I met a partner's parents, and I tried really, really hard to get them to like me because I'm kissing their firstborn child. I'm in the house, dad's watching sports. I love sports, I lied. Mom's working on a puzzle. I love puzzles. They used to call me the puzzle king in high school. Her brother's playing Mario Odyssey. I love Mario. Oh, wait, I don't have to impress you. You suck at this game. In an effort to get them to like me more, I brought a gift for Gif's family. I got them a little baby cactus because it's small and prickly and doesn't like to be touched. Just like her. Ooh, ow, babe. No, no, babe. It was a joke. It was a joke, babe. I'm sorry. Gif's Thanksgiving meal was the polar opposite of my family's Thanksgiving. My family does Thanksgiving with 2 other families, and they all come together with mashed potatoes, and everyone gets in a line with paper plates, and we all have 1 big mashed potato potluck. Then I sit at the kids' table to avoid talking about politics. Gif's family used real plates and had candles, and everyone puts a napkin on their lap. I felt like Shrek at Fiona's castle. They had 3 forks of various sizes, but I still wanted them to like me, so I wasn't about to point out that it made no sense to use 3 different forks to eat a meal. This must be why Gif is so afraid of knives. All these cutlery options are bringing up childhood traumas of going up all the stairs. But Gif's family was so fancy that I actually didn't even meet them on Thanksgiving. My memory just filled in that we were having a Thanksgiving meal. Gif read this script and was like, you know you didn't meet them on Thanksgiving, right? That was just a regular Tuesday brunch. That wasn't even a meal to be thankful for? Why'd we talk about politics so much? One of the big political debates we have is that Gif tells me I wear dad socks. But I don't think she understands my genius. You see, if I buy and wear the same pair of socks for the rest of my life, I'll never have to worry about matching socks ever again. So I've already picked out the socks that I'm going to be wearing at my funeral. And as we were wrapping up our non-thankful meal, I got up from the table, and Gif's dad said, hey, I have those socks. So I guess she's right about some things. And her dad totally likes me now. In the end, as long as I make Gif happy, then I know her parents will like me, no matter what socks I wear. And as long as you're with someone who makes you a happier person, then they're a good partner too. Even if they refuse to throw away the dead snake they've had in their freezer for almost 3 years.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, which, if for whatever reason you haven't seen, you should go watch it, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there. You got a PayPal? No, I'm only 15. Crap. So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, Garfield, that's not pea-sized. And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, yes, it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable. I don't know why it's not round, though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield! And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, not as excited. There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. And then he's going to go brush his teeth, and I like how this one has a massive toothbrush. And then they all go, Garfield, that's not pea-sized. And then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste, and he's like, yes it is, because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round. And all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, they say you should use the really big toothpaste. He's about to go and says, Garfield, that's not paste. And then he's, yes it is. Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his, IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece. Garfield interrupts him by doing, listen. He basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. Yes, it is.
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish, and then John comes in. They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes. And then he has another giant toothbrush. Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush. I know, John, it's a crack pipe. Well, life has no real meaning anyway. Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be a toothbrush and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield. How I drew Garfield. So he goes, Garfield, that's not pieces. Translation, that's not your toothbrush. He takes it. And then translation, to fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power. Yes, it is. His secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, by James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag, and has her Twitter, and he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying, happy birthday, and then, wah, and then firefighters go, where's the fire? And then John goes, my cat just Have been a bee day. I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep beep and the first beep looks funny like how it was in the first one. And John goes, oh no. For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time. Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that...
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at... internet stuff? Which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it.
And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story. Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway. How may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James. How may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name.
Idiot.
Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it all right if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said, I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes, so you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh...
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma? 'Cause why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293.
because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3, so I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did, so I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning, and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly! Timmy fell down the well, Vance!
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance!
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay, goodbye.
No, I got the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all, maybe there's something else going on, maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me. Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. Just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.
Oh, so that means we have to start the video. We have to give it, like, an introduction.
Okay.
You have to do that.
Hey, everyone! Welcome back to a- Ugh, that was bad. What's going on, everyone? This is your boy, The Odd Ones Out, back again with another crazy video. I'm here with Jaden Animations and Something Else YT. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. Wait, do we have to be more enthusiastic? Like,
hey, it's me, Something Else YT.
Don't be fake. I guess let's just get right into the game. We have to probably explain the rules. That would be smart.
James, you thought of this idea. And so.
Well, way to throw me under the bus. You'll probably get it as we go along, but basically we all chose words, just a three-letter word, and then we made an acronym for that word. So an example would be bus would be big ugly snail, and then we would draw a big ugly snail, and then the other people would have to try and guess bus. And we'll give them clues. We'll push them in the right direction. It's going to be a kind of a guessing game.
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Jaden are basically competing right now.
Prepare to lose, Adam.
So this is a three-letter word. People watch my videos for my artistic ability. That's for sure.
I'm, like, trying to concentrate because I want to beat Jaden.
Let's hope this is good. Let's hope you guys can get this. I'm such an artist.
He's narwhal.
Falling on... Fam? Is it fam?
Fam? Like yes fam or yas fam?
Fan as in like air conditioner fan.
What would the three words be?
F-A-N. Falling under...
Under narwhals.
Oh,
did I
heard,
get it?
I heard no, falling...
No, I said it first.
I said it first.
Oh.
You said fan. It was falling under narwhals.
Yes.
I said fan, but I meant falling under... Okay. I gave that one to you, Adam.
Oh, now I have to draw Jaden. Oh, shoot. I have to draw Jaden in front of Jaden. Perfect. So that's kind of how you play the game, right? Falling under narwhals.
I get it.
You get it. Good. You won this round, so I hope you get it.
So it's my turn, right? We ready?
Yes. I've never been more ready in my entire life.
We kind of have to, like, wait for the whole picture to be finished.
Kinda.
So, I guess, Adam, how was your day?
I'm doing good, James. How was your day?
It's alright.
Well, that sucks.
You guys want to start guessing?
Treehouse box.
Is it under something again?
Yeah.
Box underground?
Yeah.
Bug!
Wait.
Bug!
Bug!
Yeah, it's a bug.
Box underground.
That was so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, wrecked.
Is this my turn now?
Now we're up in the stakes. Adam's doing four-letter word. Did you guys know that LASER is an acronym?
Okay.
I only know it because I had it in a video once, and it's light amplification by simulated emissions of radiation. Which actually, that doesn't even spell out laser.
Yeah, what's the Z? So, wait, is it supposed to be laser as in S? Wait, is there two ways of spelling laser?
You're asking the wrong person on how to spell.
Oh yeah, you're right. Cut to, like, all your misspellings in your videos.
I've done this new tactic where I purposely misspell things, like, really wrong. So when I actually do misspell something, people will be like, oh, that's just his thing. He misspells things.
So you cheat.
So, like, when you actually do a real typo, it's like, oh, I totally meant to do that.
Yeah, exactly. My teacher's part two video, there was a chalkboard that said how to escape a restaurant, and I used the wrong two on purpose, but restaurant was misspelled, so like I totally meant to misspell restaurant.
You're right, I believe you.
Is it dirty orange?
Can I solve the puzzle?
Yes.
Is it Doug?
No.
Whoa.
What? I can't read those hieroglyphics.
Change your stabilizer, dude.
You know what, James? I will.
Can I solve the puzzle?
Yes.
Dome. D-O-M-E. Dirty orange, overly misses.
No.
It's dirty orange?
Yeah.
You dirty orange.
Ugh, get demonetized. He missed.
And he. And if he hit him, he would be dead.
What? Dirty orange, very extreme. Dove.
No.
I keep wanting to say miss.
Dirty orange might.
Kill.
Wait.
Wait, kill?
Yes.
Dunk.
Yes.
Dirty orange
wait,
can't
yeah, you
kill.
Got it.
Dunk.
Wait, who said dunk?
What? I didn't say. I said
dunk.
Dunk?
Yeah, wait.
What kind of word is dunk? Oh. Is it dirty orange never kills? Or
what is another word?
No, 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 no. It's like no, 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 no. Nearly.
Yes.
Nearly killed.
So it's a four-letter word. It's going to be fun. This is going to be fun.
Dinosaur.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not going to say it anymore. I don't want to give you guys...
I want to get the little letter hints or letter points. Those are like 0.3 points, right?
Are we keeping score?
No.
Bronchiosaur.
Oh!
Underwear. Swimming suits.
Bronchiosaurus underwear.
Isn't it like a brachiosaurus? People are gonna let us know.
I just know them from Land Before Time, and in Land Before Time they're called long necks. And also leaves are called tree stars.
I had a computer game of that, of Land Before Time, and there was like this hay maze, and I was really scared of that game.
Tony the Tiger. Angry Tony the Tiger.
Is that Tony the Tiger?
Is it? I don't know.
Tiger, it's just a tiger. Angry tiger.
Yeah, that's actually good. An angry tiger.
Okay, so bronchio soars under an underwear angry tiger.
I'm going to do something, and you might be a little confused on what I'm about to do.
Okay.
In my mind, it makes sense.
Justin Bieber's...
Is it an emo tiger?
Emo tiger?
Close.
Mark a tiger! I was wrong.
Maybe I should start giving you clues now.
I think he's like a, it's not a phase mom tiger.
You give it like a little Hitler stash.
That's makeup. That's makeup.
Oh, okay. Jeez.
Actually, you're right. That does kind of, no, it's makeup. We're all agreeing that this is a tiger.
Yeah.
So angry emo tiger with bronchiosaur underwear.
This is a big clue.
Tumblr.
Tumblr. Tumblr tiger.
A feminist tiger.
Let's throw out some clues. That's still the wrong layer. What was this dinosaur called again?
A bronchiosaur.
I think it was brachiosaurus. Okay.
Brachiosaurus.
A long neck. Eosaur.
Cut to like all your misspellings in your videos.
Amon. Okay, so that's the first one. Now I'm just coloring it. Now I'm just like adding some little details.
B-A-E. Is it bean?
Bean.
This is so fun. I like this. What is he wearing?
Panties.
Is but. It what?
But.
Okay, but yeah, but what's the sentence? What's the sentence?
Bronchiosaur underwear, Tony the Tiger.
Tumblr Tiger.
Tumblr Tiger.
No.
Tumblr shaming.
Underwear. Ticks off. Triggers Tiger!
Triggers Tiger, yes!
wait, what was it?
Triggers Tigers.
My favorite word.
Yeah. So it's butt. I kind of want to finish this drawing now.
James?
No, I'm not done yet. Okay.
Okay. So, mine is four letters now.
Wait, I can't see your thing.
Look with your eyes.
Well, you're right. What was I thinking?
I was like, should I draw a stick figure? Nah, I'll try a little bit.
I think me and Adam are closely looking at the drawing, just, you know, thinking of things, and we're not talking, and we're just being silent.
So, James.
What, Adam? Parents.
Am I right? A fish. An eel.
Yeah. Oh.
Mom oh. Eel. Meat. Mom eel meme.
What? You got the word, but you didn't get the
mom eating meat eel.
My eels. Mom eating my eels.
Mom eating my eel.
No.
Mom eating Marco's eel.
Look at all those eels. Mom eating many eels?
Mom eating more eels.
Yes! Mom eating many eels.
I had it. I had that. I blame myself for saying it out loud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
This is like advanced territory. We had a hard time with butt, girl, dress, lady, teacher.
Wait, you got one of the words.
Is it James?
What?
Adam, you don't have to go fast. It's okay. You can take your time. You can draw good if you want.
Boxing glove. Tiny lady?
Getting close.
Is it midget lady?
No. She's ants. I mean, wait.
Answering?
More tomatoes.
Oh, so they are tomatoes?
No, they're not tomatoes. You're close, though.
They're apples. They're big cherries. Are they big cherries?
Okay, so they're apples.
Lady answering apples?
Lap. Just L-A-A-A-A-A-P.
Lap. Another one. Teeny tiny, is there two T's?
Something lady answering. Tiny lady answering.
Apples. Is it llama?
What?
Little lady answering many apples.
You just pick up an apple, you go, hello, and then someone on the other line goes, is banana there? I actually lied to you guys. This is a six-letter word. I thought of it, and then I was thinking of acronyms for it, and then I said, wait, this is a six-letter word. Ah, who cares?
Is it James? That's a five-letter word. Never mind.
James.
Charmander.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, Charmander. Angry Charmander asking for lots of pickles.
How'd you get it so quick, Adam?
So, Jaden, what's the deal with airline food?
Funny you mention it. When I was getting a ticket for Europe, there's like a meal option because it was like an 8-hour flight. There was like meal options, and one of them said bland meal. Like, yes, I would like one bland meal, please.
I would like my meal extra bland.
Egg.
That's a kind of close.
Poliwhirl. Cinnamon buns.
Cinnabuns.
Oh, what is
it? Another Pokemon?
Pokey.
Is this the seventh generation?
Meatloaf.
Egg roll.
Oh!
Charmander eating egg rolls and he's angry.
Charmander angry at egg roll that's too hot for consumption. Sassy egg roll. Sexy egg roll.
Oh. Charmander angry at a sexy egg roll.
Is it cheese?
Charmander hunting every exy sexy egg rolls.
How did you get egg roll?
Because I drew an egg roll, Jaden.
Charmander humping, like humph.
Everyone?
What?
Charmander hearing everyone eat sexy egg rolls. No, that's not it. I like to say my words with enthusiasm just in case I do get it right.
Enormous sexy egg roll.
Dang it. Jaden's doing better than me.
I dislike.
Charmander hates.
Yeah. No! Charmander hates everyone's enormous sexy egg roll.
Good job, team. Okay. So this one is 5 letters.
Oh, I think I know one of the letters.
Ant.
It's an A, yes. Are those petunias? Oh, and those are gardening tools.
Yeah.
Electric ants gardening. Egad. Oh, there's a little elephant.
Okay.
Wait, long elephant.
Yeah?
A wiener dog elephant.
You guys are really close.
Wiener elephant.
No, Adam, you're going farther away.
Electric ants gardening long elephants.
Yeah, so what's the word?
Eagle.
Wait, no. Energy.
Yaggle. Eagle!
Dang it.
Yaggle.
I got it. Caca.
I'd like to guess. Yaggle for 500.
So, I guess everyone go watch everyone else's videos now, if you haven't already. When people see this, we've already been to VidCon, right? Oh, VidCon was so fun, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I love VidCon.
I love that one part. Mm. James, I can't believe you said that on the panel.
Okay, well, thanks for watching, everyone. And as always, wear your seatbelt. Okay, bye.
Bye.
I don't like that bye. Don't put that one in.
Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What? I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippo. Campus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, a Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it.
You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse?
Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone?
No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans. Probably should have started with that one.
That's... okay, I guess.
Alright, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg. Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters? No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed.
Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A Blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Ow, it's on its chest, like some kind of Pokemon. Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him? My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me. All right, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpuppard. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake. Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes? Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off. Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Girovulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbina.
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 That's what I write. It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it would be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake neck turtle. It's a lot like the Serpuppard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there.
Jeff, you have the board.
I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex.
This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off.
Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute?
Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal.
Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out.
If you didn't know this Odd Ones Out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my I'll settle for this job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked, though, but how hard can it be?
Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework.
And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect.
But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube, and then they'd say, Mr. James, are you the Odd Ones Out?
The Odd Ones Out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James.
I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this, and in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this. Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar? Yeah, I was lazy. Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, "Stop. Who's flat?" Then she pointed at a boy and told him, "You, sing." And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, "You, sing." Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, "You, sing." And I sung. "Stop, James," during the next song. "Don't sing." Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing! I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time, I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one, and without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it. But it's fine if you like it. In my classroom, we try to go for realism. But people with that art style can still have successful careers." She said she hated it. Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn. You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher. Wouldn't you? Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, "Oh, we're doing this now?" I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, du, trois, quatre, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher. Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, "You know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave." I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day. I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, "Oh good, he's alive." And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US History teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid-back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said, "Guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test." Aww, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. "Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my ninth grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in ninth grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part two.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something and then stop the camera and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day. And while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Oh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and is absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply, basically we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there.
Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings.
Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it wasn't. It's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings.
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kinda like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh.
We still don't have the processing power to render everything out.
Oh, I know. We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this. A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations. But no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons. But they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions,
But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and 5 different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into 2 or 3 different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like. Like 4, or 5, or 160.